Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
I love riding my bike. I love running. I don't care what they think about it. I love it.
At that point when I knew I was going to win, chills just went up and down my entire body.
I don't believe there are any good or bad foods. Food is food.
I still feel so passionate about getting that record that I'm like, I'm just going to do it.
As an athlete, I was like, what's my story or what's your story? What can you learn from it and what can you teach people?
Welcome to the Iron Women Podcast. I'm Alyssa Gadeski and I'm here with my co-host, professional triathlete, Haley Chura. Haley, I think that despite the fact that neither of us were racing this past weekend, it seemed like we had our hands full just kind of getting a grasp on what was going on in the world of triathlon, because it seems like there's also a lot of track and field going on. It's like summer's in full swing, racing's in full swing. I don't even know if I can keep track of it all these days, but I think you're here to help me and we're going to do a little run through of some of the racing that has been going on.
Yeah, it was a busy, busy weekend of racing. And I think, you know, in Europe and in the United States, we touched on it a little bit last week when we were talking about some of the age group races. We were excited to follow our favorite Coeur d'Alene, which does not have a pro race this year. But the races that did have a pro race, Tremblant, which is another, have you ever raced in Mont Tremblant, Alyssa?
I have not. And now that it's just a stone throw away, I feel like, from where I live now, I definitely want to get there to do a race at some point.
It is like Ironman Disneyland. I haven't done the half. I've done the full. And I will say when I did the full, I was like, this would be a great half.
I say that about every full.
It's kind of like one of those courses. It's like Coeur d'Alene where it's like, you know, one loop is plenty. Like that was plenty. Like one loop was fun. We don't need to do it again. But that was, you know, a little bit of a controversial race there because Flora Duffy, Olympic champion, wanted to race there trying to get a 70.3 world slot, which I think is a surprise to me that she didn't already have a 70.3 world slot. I guess last year they offered her a wild card because she was the Olympic gold medalist, but I guess that was only for 1 year. So she did need to qualify, didn't race, you know, planned to race Chattanooga, got COVID, didn't race there. Planned to race in Tremblant, and I think her bike didn't show up. So she was not able to start the race there, which is a bummer. You know, it is.
Yeah, Flora's 2022, I feel like, has been off to a bumpy start. So hoping she's able to, like, stay positive. She's had COVID now twice, I believe, this season, like, since the start of the new year. Yeah, and then these issues, I feel like her luck has got to turn. And she's, you know, I really enjoyed chatting with her, and I feel like her disposition definitely isn't like asking for unlucky things to be happening to her, you know, or anything like that. So hopefully things turn, and I would love to see her at 70.3 worlds. I think that is an addition that needs to happen, obviously, for this year.
I know. I think there might be a little bit of a campaign to see if they can get her a wild card slot to race in St. George in October. So we'll see what happens, but I know she'll get there eventually and it'll be worth the wait. But I mean, Olympic gold medalists, they're just like us. Bad things happen to them.
Well, too. You know what? Actually, along those veins, I think I just saw an Instagram story from Summer Rappaport that her bike was lost. Wow. And I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I think it was Air Canada also. And so I think she just recently, because I think that was Flora's too, right? So
yeah.
I don't, again, I don't, I mean, I feel like every, I don't want to ruin any potential Iron Women sponsors one day, but I don't have a lot of faith in Air Canada right now.
I think, yeah, every airline is definitely, I mean, everything I read, every report is just travel is a nightmare right now. And someone with a little bit of travel on the horizon that makes me a little nervous, but I'm like, you just got to go with the flow. But congratulations to Tamara Jewett, you know, who did win that race. Amber Ferreira, another Iron Women, past Iron Women podcast guest, came in second. Great to see her racing again. And Rachel Olson coming in third. So yeah, we've talked to that whole podium in the past couple of years. So still a great race.
See what happens if you interview with Iron Women, you get on podiums.
Yes, like that's actually, yeah.
Tried and true.
But speaking of travel, I mean, it was Elsinore in, is that Denmark? Or is that right? You've been to Denmark.
I've been to Denmark, but I haven't been to Elsinore, but I've only been to a tiny part of Denmark.
I hope so.
It sounds like that maybe, but it also sounds like it could be
in
Sweden.
It's Copenhagen. It's okay. North of Copenhagen. There's a map feature.
Oh, that is where I went. So
on the Ironman, yeah, there's like a little map feature, but then I just tried to like zoom out and it looks like near Copenhagen. I think it's Denmark.
Okay.
So we're learning geography as we go, but that was a championship race, 70.3 European Championship. And Emma Pallant took that win. Ash Gentle second. India Lee third. We have not talked to India Lee, so maybe we need to get her on our radar. our podium streak just ended. That was quick, but it's just because it hasn't happened yet. We're right. Working on that. But no, stacked field there, as you can imagine, just because with it being a championship race and you know, very fast course there. I think that's, you know, they're all real close to 4 hours, and it looked like, you know, very fast day. And then there were a couple of Ironmans, that full Ironman distance races that happened in Europe as well. Ironman Frankfurt, which we had a discussion about this because it was a very interesting setup where it was a championship race for the men, but not the women. And
because the women had the championship race a couple, 3 weeks ago or something.
In Hamburg.
So they in Hamburg, they split the championship races for male and female. And so that meant at those championship races, there was still a race for the other, but it had less Kona spots and less prize money for them. So interesting approach, but in the end, it's a wash for equality. So we'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. It works out. But it was like one of those things where I was like, wait, I definitely looked at those results and I was like, why are there so many fewer women than men? I mean, Europe has a reputation for, you know, definitely having more men typically on the start line than women, but this was like drastic. And you and I helped me get to the bottom of that it was a championship race for the men, not a championship for the women, but still great racing. Daniela Blaymel, Nikki Bartlett, Dimity Lee Duke, you know, rounding out that podium there. So we see, I think, you know, Nikki Bartlett was in St. George, but I think Daniela Blaymel did not race there. Dimity Lee Duke did not race in St. George. So we are kind of seeing some of these women who in Europe, it was, you know, either travel restrictions or other reasons, decided not to race in St. George, but obviously still racing very well. Same with Ironman France in Nice, right? That happened this past weekend as well, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And that one.
And with those, Alexander Tondor and then Zelinka. Gabriela Zelinka. So some of these names I'm definitely not as familiar with. But definitely that is a course that I admire anyone who races that course. Having done that 70.3 in Nice.
I was going to say, that's another one where you probably finished the half and we're like, I'm good here.
I finished the half and I was good with triathlon.
You're like, it could have been an Olympic.
Yes. Actually, I still think about that one sometimes because I think I had a 3-hour bike split, which is definitely my slowest pro bike split. And I also was like, I needed therapy after that descent. But then Julie Moss, we talked to Julie Moss afterwards and she felt the same way. And she had raced in these previously.
I feel like they must have changed the bike course because the bike times aren't blazing, but they're not too slow.
There's a lot of routes around there, but it is very technical riding. Yeah. Definitely not what I'm suited for. You will not catch me at Ironman France, but congratulations to everyone who did race there. It is spectacularly beautiful. And I will add that race goes down in history as my best ever like post race because I just like hung out on the beach and we paid for like the, you can buy or not buy, rent like a lounge chair on the beach. And it was worth every penny. And then I like ordered a milkshake though, like a chocolate milkshake, which is bizarre. And it was not the same as a chocolate milkshake in the United States, but I drank it. It was still delicious. And some like other adult beverages and snacks. I think I got some carrots, which is like very healthy post-race. But it was like, I was like, I need to do this more often. Why don't I do this more often? I'm like, probably because you're not on the French Riviera post-race every race. But anyway, great racing, you know, across the globe. And then the fun doesn't end because this weekend do you know what's happening this weekend?
Wait, I have the one result that I managed to scoop you on was that Paula Finley won the, and I could be like saying this name wrong, but I think not her name, Paula Finley is the correct name, but the name of the race was the Canadian, I want to say the Canadian World Championships, but it's obviously not the Canadian World Championships. It's like the Canadian Time Trial National Championships, I think is what it was. And she, I read a little article about it. I knew she was racing, and I read an article that said like she was definitely a dark horse for the other competitors. No one was really giving her too much of a time of day as the triathlete coming in. And then she smoked it. I think she was like the clear winner by quite a bit and took top step at the podium. So that's good to see Paula getting, you know, outside, not really outside her comfort zone, I guess, because time trial is life, but using that to capitalize on that race. So congrats, Paula. And yes, Haley, you're right though. This weekend, the racing fun continues.
Well, wait,
we have,
I know, but I forgot one other that, okay. I don't know how to say.
Oh, no. Okay.
Well, challenge, but this past weekend, that challenge Kaiser, sorry, my German. I am definitely butchering all of the that, but I think it was like Simone. Oh my goodness, where's the name? Kumhofer, and then Lotta Wilms and Amy Zimmerman from the United States, like traveled over to Europe. I mean, we're not seeing that quite as much, but that was the podium there. But anyway, I did want to throw that one out there too. I forgot that that race happened in Europe again. I'm definitely not as good as following the European circuit, but this weekend, like you said, big challenge race happening this weekend.
Challenge wrote all of the fun. Like this race just looks so much fun. It's such a big event. It's so fun to follow. All of the like media around it just makes it look like such a good time, which is why I enjoy following this race. It's also good fast racing, so you never know what's going to happen. We see Annie Haug back on that start list. I think the returning podium is coming back. So it Laura should be Siddle, good fast racing. Yeah,
who just Laura had Siddle. A really incredible race in St. George. You know, Annie Haug, both Annie Haug, Laura Siddle, both had really incredible races in St. George, and will race there. Finella, who Langridge, who rounded out the podium in last year in 2021 in Roth, I'll call it Roth. she raced solidly in St. George, which I think was her first like Ironman World Championships. But you know that, you know, I think she's going to be ready for, again, not her first Roth. And so I think it's going to be fun to see that podium return. And then some good challengers like Judith Corcon, who did not race in St. George, is going to be there. Rebecca Clark, who did not race in St. George, but we saw have a really good race at Ironman Australia, making that trip. And then Maya Stage Nielsen, who did have a great race in St. George, also in Roth. And so this is always one that's like so fun. And the times are usually really fast. And I feel like with Kat Matthews going, you know, and Nicholas Spear going insanely fast times at the Sub-8 project, Laura Phillips, 8:18 in Hamburg, like, we're getting used to like very, very fast times. So I'm like very curious what we're going to see Annie Haug do in Roth. Torsten at tryrating.com has her running a 250. That seems slow. I bet she runs much faster than 250.
I think so too. Come on, Torsten. You can give us a little
Well, that's
bit
what
more.
The stats say, yeah. But I feel like she ran like a 245 there last year or something. I think you have to
run something like 3 years in a row, and then Torsten might give you your seed time that's like within 10 minutes of that.
She ran a 2:43 there last time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Last year she went 7:50. Wait, it says 7:53. Was it maybe something was short last year? Was the bike short last year? Yeah, 4:14 seems a little fast.
Okay.
So the bike might have been I think it was a little short last year, but still 2:43. I think the marathon might have been. It was close. It's still fast. But definitely, I don't know. That's always one that's so fun to watch. It's on my bucket list for sure. I gotta get myself to Europe someday in the distant future. But I do have a race coming up kind of soon, Alyssa. I'm gonna race the Clash Watkins Glen. So
that's talking about fun into Watkins Glen. There's a nice little hike you can do there, actually, to see some waterfalls.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And this is like part of the country I've never been to. And
there's good wine tasting. It's like sweet wine in that area, I think. So you have to like sweet wine, I think.
Well, we get free entry into the wine festival post-race. Whoa. Because it's going on during the race. So yeah, it's happening. Whoa. Like I haven't done a Clash race but I've wanted to. It's just like, again, travel's hard these days. And getting to the East Coast, but I decided I am going to do it. I have some extra time padded in. So fingers crossed everything goes smooth. But if it doesn't, I'm like prepared. I will bring, extra books and extra snacks for if there's any extra layovers. I don't think I could run the bike course, but 50 miles is a little hard. But anyway, I have never been to the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. I'm very excited to see it. And everyone says it's so beautiful. And then I think, this is the run is on the race course at Watkins Glen, but I hear it's very hilly. Have you actually been to the race course, the run?
I don't think I've been yes, technically I have, because I think when we were walking to that hike, we walked and there was like on the street, it said like start or finish or something. Like, I think it was part of the race course that we were on, but that whole area is incredibly hilly. So you're going to do really well because you love hills. You run really well on hills.
I'm telling myself.
So that's actually really, really good for you. The bike probably won't be super hilly, but it should be rolling, I imagine. And then the swim, I've never swum in that lake, but looks nice.
Seneca Lake. I think, yeah, hopefully it's cold. That's like that's what I'm hoping for. But again, I love using triathlon as a way to visit new places and meet new people. And so that is sort of, that's one of my reasons I haven't really raced in the Northeast. So I think this is a chance to do that.
So at the wine, this is your post-race project, Haley. At the wine festival, you should look for the Three Brothers Winery, I think it is. So that winery is the winery that did the Alexi Pappas Bravey Rosé.
Whoa, I wonder if I can try it. Oh.
Yeah, I ordered it from them when they did the pre-order. It's actually really good. It's like, I love rosé. So it's like one of my go-tos, I feel like, now that I would definitely order from them again. And so yeah, I think it's called Three Brothers. You might have to double check me, but
I don't know anything.
I bet they'll
about,
be there. I feel like, why wouldn't they be?
I don't know anything about there, wine, so. But I feel like this could be the chance to learn something. And yeah. I'm definitely gonna look for the Bravey Rosé. I feel like that's like perfect for this situation. But definitely have that look forward to.
And Haley, for our listeners, we have just one thing. If you are listening to this on Thursday, June 30th, this is the day it comes out. So you are a top fan. You get a top fan badge. And you have hours left, counting down the hours till midnight to get 30% off of any test at Inside Tracker. This is a special promotion. It ends tonight, the day the podcast is dropping, June 30th at midnight. I'm not sure if that's Eastern or Pacific, so just do it earlier. And 30% off, that's a huge deal. We've been talking about races. There's more races coming up. You're in the middle of the season. It's a really good time to try and sneak that, mid-season test in to make sure everything's going well and your body's kind of running strong and you're good to go for the latter half of the season. If you're listening after Thursday.
Well, what's the code? Wait, did we say what the code was? Oh, 30% off?
Oh, no, I didn't say what the code. The 30% off code is all caps, Feisty ebook 30. We'll put it in the show notes. Feisty ebook 30. It's in the show notes. If you're listening after Thursday, then you're a medium fan. So you get a medium fan badge. And your code so is mean. The same as always, which isn't even a code. It's go to insidetracker.com/feisty. And that's how you get your 20% discount off of Inside Tracker. Definitely something everyone should be doing, checking out their health.
We love fans of all temperatures. The fan part is the important, whether you're top or whether you're well done or you're medium. But yes, great deal. We love Inside Tracker. Thank you for supporting the podcast. And we actually have an interview for you this week. This one is kind of a little bit different because, I love to talk to people who are a little bit behind the scenes in the sport because they help make the sport run and they help us see the sport. And that's exactly what Deborah Castellanos does. She is a professional sports photographer. So you may have seen her work at races like Challenge Daytona, Challenge Miami, any of the world championships that have happened in St. George, as well as the LA Triathlon last month. So Deb is based in Miami, Florida, but she does work with individual athletes, brands, as well as events. So she tells us how she became a sports photographer, what goes into capturing the special moments that you get to see in an Ironman distance race and how difficult that is. And she tells us about her personal favorite race day image. So we'll have that full conversation with Deb right after the break. Hi, Deb. Welcome to the Iron Women podcast.
Hi, Haley. Hi, Alisa. Thank you for having me.
So you are a slightly different guest for our show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your current role within the endurance sports world?
Yeah, so I am a sports photographer, and it's quite unique because I think I'm one of the only girls doing it as of now, or very few ones. I'm based in Miami, Florida. I'm actually an architect. That's, you know, that's what I went to university for, and that's what I studied and worked in for a number of years. But, you know, I think it was last June when I decided to sort of quit my job and just do this more full time, because it was one of my passions for many, many years.
And so how did you then kind of fall into, like, you know, photography within endurance sports world? Were you an athlete as a kid? Like, do you do sports now? Like, is it just, are you a fan of sports and that's just what has drawn you to it?
Yeah, I think it all started when my running really like picked up. I'd say maybe like 2017, I started really like training hard. And then I would go a lot to, there's like a place here in Miami called Key Biscayne, which is like a little heaven for athletes. And there's a lot of triathletes and runners that go there. So I started going and started surrounding myself with triathletes. And I've had photography as a hobby and one of my passions since I was really, really young. So my dad is actually a photographer, so I guess that's where I get it from. And, you know, when I started just running more and training for the marathon, and I would see like triathletes, and it sort of hit me that I wanted to join, you know, my passion for sports and photography. But I feel like what was interesting is that I wasn't a triathlete myself, but I started going to triathlons and photographing triathlons just to like support friends. They'll be like, "Oh, you want to come out? We're gonna be racing." And I'll be like, "Yeah, sure, I'll come out and I'll shoot you guys, and so you guys have the memories." So that's how it started. It started very like organic, I feel.
And you talk about this transition from architecture to photography. Like, where did your passion for architecture just come from growing up with, you know, a family that was art focused and that was the career path you decided to take?
That's a good question. You know, I feel like when I finished high school and I was looking for sort of like a horizons, a career to study, I found myself to be more on the creative side. So I thought I would join architecture because I wanted to like express that. I found the career very beautiful and I enjoyed it. And then when I finished, I actually studied in Canada. So when I finished, I stayed there to work for many years doing airport planning, which is completely like unrelated to what I'm doing now. And then, you know, I moved here to Miami like 5 years ago and I started doing more residential architecture. But nobody in my family is really an architect. I was just, you know, my Italian dad who I grew up with, he's in the construction business. So he was like, "Hey, why don't you study architecture so you can come work with me?" But, you know, it never happened.
And what about that transition, you know, to stepping into the photography world full time? You know, I think some of the listeners of our shows are pro athletes who, you know, like Haley and myself at one point kind of had to step away from a job or figure out maybe how to do both and kind of foster that hobby that you're trying to make into more of like your main gig, that sort of thing. So, you know, was that scary for you? Can you tell us about, was it just really, were you like, "Whoa, this is like a need I can fill," and it was like took off and you never had to look back?
No. Yeah, I see that. No, it was like with the pandemic, you know, I started working from home. I was still doing my architecture job, but I started working from home and I had more free time now that I was home. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to start my Instagram page because I wanted to share what I have been doing here locally in Miami, you know, supporting friends and shooting local races, triathlon races. And, you know, that picked up and I found myself doing both things at the same time. And it was really intense. So I was working full time as an architect up until last year. And I think I started I started pursuing more art, more photography, sorry, maybe like almost 2 years ago, more, you know, at putting myself out there, going to events, things like that. So there was a point last summer where I saw it picking up that I was like, okay, maybe I have enough that I can like leave my architecture job, because I was way more happy doing photography, like going out to races, traveling, meeting wonderful people and athletes, that, you know, at one point I said, I have to jump. I have to do the switch, because I'm never going to have, you know, this opportunity again. It's either now or never. And I feel like, you know, I've been blessed in a way that it really worked out.
And so tell us about your photography business. Are you working mostly for brands or for individual athletes?
I would say a little bit of both. You know, I've worked with some athletes and also for brands. So I'm sort of freelance now, and sometimes for the event, you know, it really depends. And, you know, I've become a big, big fan of triathlon, like for a few years now. So, you know, a lot of the athletes that I have been following, it's been amazing to finally get to meet them in person and work with them. You know, I've worked a ton with Rudy Von Berg, and, you know, and some of the athletes. But yeah, basically it's freelance for athletes and brands.
And what about where, you know, you're shooting the athletes? Do you prefer to do this in a studio or out in like their element? You know, if like you're working with Rudy on something, are you like, just go train, I'm going to follow you around for the day? Like, how does that work?
I'd say I prefer outside. Like, you know, I love nature. I love being outside. So I haven't really delved that much into studio work, so mainly outside. But it's funny, because I feel like this is an industry that's very heavily, that's relied more on men. Like, it's not very usual to see a female sports photographer. So I feel like there's some interesting, interesting mechanics that derive from that. Like, for example, Rudy, sometimes he's being like, oh, so tomorrow I have a 10-mile run, and it's going to be on this trail, and there's rocks, so you have to bring your bike. This is like last year, and I remember I wasn't feeling too comfortable at that point, like being on a bike with all my camera gear, and I was like, what? I'm like, Rudy, okay, you have a girl sports photographer, like, let's change your route, let's pick an easy thing, I go with my bike, I'll take all my gear. He's like, oh, okay, we'll change your route.
How do you feel like you're like received by the photographer community? Because I saw you in Los Angeles, you were shooting the PTO Pro-Am, and I do think every other photographer there, they had a lot of like world-class sports, endurance sport photographers there. And you were included with that, but I do believe you were the only woman. Did you feel like, you know, embraced by that community?
Yeah, I love that question, because I feel like that's been a very influential factor in me, you know, diving so deep into sports photography. I feel like because I'm one of the few women around in the media environment, you know, I've received a lot of love. Like, I found so many amazing friends, you know, from the very beginning, from Eduardo from Raw Endurance, who's a local photographer here in Miami, who's also amazing. We became like really good friends from the beginning. He supported me a lot. To James Mitchell, who's like now a great friend and I love a lot as well. You know, I feel like everyone has been very special to me, has treated me, you know, amazingly. So that has been one of the main reasons why I feel like, you know, I've been able to like do this so much and get so much out of it.
You talked about like, oh, okay, you know, the mountain biking, the trail, you know, shooting on a trail run is a little bit difficult for you. But are there any things that you think that being a woman gives you an advantage? Is there anything that you can think of?
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that I can think of is when I work with other female athletes. Like, I feel that there's a different chemistry when you're between women or when to have like a female athlete work with a male photographer. I feel like that's one of the advantages. And I've spoken about this with other photographers. They've been like, yeah, it's great to have you around, because then when we have other girls, it's just like a different energy and things flow better. Or, you know, female athletes, some might feel more comfortable. I don't know. I just find like maybe that's one of the advantages. And yeah, maybe there's more, but you know, that was one that I've actually like discussed with other photographers out there. And you know, there's like the pros and cons. Like sometimes I'm trying to get inspired by other like male photographers and be like, okay, I gotta do this. Like if he can go on a bike, if he can hold this, if he can hold his gear, then I can do it. So then like, you know, I'm getting like, I'm trying to get, you know, as seemingly as possible process for like when other athletes work with me, they don't feel like, oh, she can't do this because she's a girl, you know, because I'm an athlete myself. So it's always like challenging me to do more.
And Deb, you were recently at the Ironman World Championships in St. George. So can you talk about your process for taking photos at an Ironman race?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ironman races, they're very unique to shoot. And, you know, the World Championships, that was a very interesting event because, you know, you got the span of the course is really big. And then you have like the hills. And I remember that day I rented an e-bike, which is what I usually do. Some events, like when I know I'm going to be traveling a lot, I rent an e-bike. And then you have to pre-plan your position. Like you have to know where you want to be. You have to time it. There's like a whole science to it because you have to like, you know, make your plans and be super prepared ahead of time. Like I know, you know, what spot I have to be at, what time, when do I have to leave, you know, how many women I might get. Maybe I'll get like the first 10 and then I go to the next spot. So I remember that day I was with my all my gear on the e-bike really early before you guys even reached Snow Canyon, like the bottom of Snow Canyon. I was there. And then you know, I had like two or three points on the bike course. And then after I finished getting all my bike shots, I got on the e-bike and I started like shooting down to try to get back to get the run. So at the end of the day, I like if I look at my Garmin, sometimes I've done like miles and miles of between walking and riding the bike. And then at the, and I remember I forgot my sunscreen and my hat like blew off on the race. So at the end of the day, I was like burnt to crisp, like exhausted. I didn't have water. Usually, you know, it's really hard to like drink or eat while you're doing that. So I feel like a full Ironman is more of a challenge because it, you know, it depends what race, like the World Championship, like here at St. George, I didn't really have time to like eat or drink. Like since I left the house in the morning to, you know, when I got the last woman, I hadn't drank like water or anything. So it's a challenge.
And do you spend the days before then, like, or at least the day before, kind of scoping the course, picking the spots, like doing the calculations, mm-hmm. like when people will be there, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually we scout the course. I remember I went, I think it was with James and someone else, Gerard from Pro Triathlon Training was there with us. We scouted the course, you know, we decided which points we wanted, like from, you know, a photography perspective, which spot looked the best and what's the closest, because you don't want to get too far that, you know, it's going to be really hard to get back.
And so what kind of camera and gear are you typically carrying when you're at a race, when you're at your e-bike? Do you have a special backpack? I mean, sounds like we need to like figure out how to have like a special sunscreen holster for you.
I always forget the sunscreen. I'm the worst. I have a backpack and I try to, you know, pack as light as possible. So I'll have like two camera bodies and two lenses, like the one, the classic 70 to 200. And then I'll have a 24-70, which is like a wider lens. It lets you get the action from closer up. That's what I have. I'll try not to like overpack because then when I'm, you know, traveling with the camera, it gets really heavy. And I remember at the 70.3 World Champs last year, I went with an e-bike all the way up the hill, you know, when you're coming out of Snow Canyon. So I went up there. And then when I was coming down, I was braking and I was coming down at like 30 miles per hour with all my gear. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't like hit a stone or something on a trip with all my cameras.
Yeah. And what about the most challenging? It sounds like Ironmans in general, because of the length and the length of the course, you know, it makes them quite challenging. But is there a race that you would say, whether it's Ironman distance or not, has been your most challenging to shoot?
I'll have to think about this one. I feel like the St. George ones have been very demanding physically because, you know, they're not, the run is a loop, but the bike is really long and, you know, you're traveling a lot. So I feel like those have been really intense. If it's a 70.3, it's a little bit easier because you're done in a few hours. It's not like a full day thing. But I feel like, you know, to do this, you have to be fit. Like my dad would tell me, my dad is like, oh, that, what you do, I can't do that. Like, I can't be like on a bike holding the camera, and the camera is very heavy. So like when you hold it up, like after you're done, I need, like, I go to my massage therapist and I'm like, oh, I just did a race. Like I need a massage.
This is truly why you are on the Iron Women podcast, because it does, you are Iron Woman worthy. Do you have a favorite image that you've captured?
If I have to think, but one that really comes to mind is I was at Challenge Miami back when it was Challenge and it was in Clash, and Lucy was there. She had finished her race and the men were racing and she was cheering on Reese, and I caught her, like, you can see her cheering on him, and then you can see Reese in the background. That's one of my favorite ones, I think.
And that's Lucy Charles Barkley cheering on Reese Barkley, or is he Reese Barkley. Charles Barkley, her husband. But that is a cool, unique chance that they both professional triathletes and they actually got to like cheer each other on because the races are at different times. So that is really cool to see that moment.
Yeah, I thought it was really special.
And what about Photoshop and editing? Do you edit your photos? Do you have to edit them in a way to fit the request of the brand or an athlete? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, for editing, so after the race is done, usually the brands want the images like ASAP. So you have to get home, download everything, make your selection, edit them, and send them out. So my day isn't really done when the race is over. It's just like I get home and it's usually like another 3 hours, you know, 4 hours. I try to do it as quick as possible because it's like a game, time game, sorry. But yeah, I do my editing. And then when there's a shoot with an athlete, it's the same. You have a little bit more time and flexibility because you're not like on the gun to deliver the image. But when it's a race, you usually have to do it like very fast.
And so YouTube channels and Instagram reels, video, you know, as a format has become super popular among endurance sports athletes and brands. Do you do any video work?
You know, I haven't really dived deep into video, but I'm going to start, like, because I know friends have been asking me, athletes have been asking, brands, and there's been a huge switch to video. So I've bought all the gear that I need. I'm practically ready to start shooting video, and I will, only because, you know, it's a very high demand right now. I think I still always love to do more photography than video, I feel. And, you know, there's also like a special aspect with photography where you can, you know, photography can turn into something physical. Like you can print an image and it can be in your house and you'll always be able to see it. Whereas a video will always be digital. But I do love, you know, video as well. And I think I'm going to start doing more of that now for sure.
Is the mindset different when you're shooting video? Like, are you, I mean, I don't know the difference. I mean, I know there's a difference like I do with my iPhone, but not from an art perspective. I mean, are you finding different backgrounds? Are you, you know, setting yourself up differently when you're doing video?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done it as much. I've done a few tests here and there, but I feel like it's a similar eye because the composition is similar to photography, but video might be a bit more forgiving than photography. You know, you have more time to capture the action versus photography. It's just like, you know, one shot, like you got one shot, somebody passes by, you got that one shot. So I feel like it's a bit more forgiving, but it is a similar mindset. Like if you have a good eye for photography, I think that you'd have a similar good eye for video.
And what about people you've admired in photography, you know, in general, maybe in sports or sports photography or something like that? You know, have there been women photographers that you look up to? You mentioned kind of, I think your dad, right, who was a photographer, but like, what about have there been any female photographers that you've kind of been able to look up to as you've been on this journey?
Interestingly enough, you know, particularly like female photographers, I found a few, but in triathlon, there's one girl that she works with, Marcel Hilger, Carla, and I love her work. And there's also a girl named Chloe, but she does more video work. And she was in LA, Haley, for the PTO prom.
Oh, okay.
She was shooting. Yeah, okay. She was shooting there as well. So she's the only female. And she said that when she saw like who was going to be there shooting, when she saw my name, she's like, oh, I know who she is. She's like the only girl who shoots triathlon. But to answer your question, Elisa, you know, I think that I haven't really come across too many women. There are upcoming. There's one girl called Nettie that she's just starting as well, shooting, but there aren't as many. And, you know, it's something I would love to see as well. But I feel like as an inspiration, like James Mitchell was a huge inspiration of mine. He's not a woman, but he was a big inspiration.
Have you worked with James? Like when you say we, when you're in St. George, are you both riding e-bikes together and kind of stationing in similar areas? Like, are you by yourself most of the time?
Well, no, we didn't ride the e-bikes together. I think this time in St. George, yes, we've worked together for, you know, for a while. And in St. George, what we did is like he rented a van. So then he would drive the van and I would shoot, or I would drive the van and he would shoot. That's what we did like for the week that we were there.
Okay. So there is a bit of a collaboration and camaraderie, but then it sounds like you are by yourself sometimes.
For sure. Yeah. It's, you know, it's been changing. Like sometimes I do collaborate. Like I work a lot as well with Eduardo from Raw Endurance, who's based in Miami as well. Like sometimes we work on jobs together. He comes to races and he shoots video and I shoot the stills. Then sometimes I work with James. You know, there's other photographers, Gerard from Pro Triathlon Training as well. I've done work with him. So sometimes there's collaboration. Sometimes I'm alone. I feel like I love both because it's a very social job at the end of the day. And, you know, I've been loving meeting everyone and just traveling and getting out there.
And you talked about how when the race is done, you know, you get back to wherever you're staying, you get the photos edited, get them to the brands, you know, that sort of thing. Do you have issues or have you ever had issues with photos ending up on social media or elsewhere kind of without your permission? Because it's, you know, I can imagine like one click of the mouse and it gets sent and then they send it and then they send it and then boom, it's like on Instagram and there's no, you know, credits and you're like, wait, this is like a job for me, right? So have you had problems with that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it happens all the time, like believe it or not, because, and you know, it's an interesting switch of mind for me, because before this used to be my hobby. So before I didn't care as much, I was like, oh yeah, it's wonderful. Like, you know, my photos out there. But then as I started learning more about the industry, you know, I learned that there's rights to licensing an image. So pretty much every time somebody uses your image, they need to have your permission, whether it be like a monetary, whether you're getting paid or not, but you know, you need the permission of the photographer to like share the image. So it's happened to me a lot of times. It's happened to me with brands. And then I have to reach out and be like, oh, thank you for using my image. But you know, this image has licensing costs. So then, you know, I have to go through the process of explaining that. And sometimes it happens with athletes too. Like they will share with the sponsors or they, because, you know, not everyone knows about it. And I feel like that's okay. It's part of the educating process. Like it's something I had to learn as well. You know, so I feel like as long as you're nice and you just explain it to people, like they'll understand. But yeah, it happens all the time.
And as far as educating people, so if you receive a photo, it's like it's, you know, the brand or an athlete before you post that on Instagram, before you share it with a brand, before you share it. I mean, I guess maybe you could share it with like your mom and be like, put this in your office, but don't post it online without permission. I mean, is that it should be the athlete or it should be the brand should be checking with you and making sure that they are within the licensing agreement. Is that right?
Yeah, I feel like when it's the brand, because the brand is purchasing the licensing rights for the image. So the brand will usually give the image to the athlete, you know, the athlete they sponsor, and that's totally okay. But then when it's like, sometimes I give, you know, an athlete that I know, I'll give them a race image. And then if they share that with the brand that sponsors them, then that's where it gets a little bit tricky, because if it's directly with a brand, then you would need to sell the licensing rights to a brand. And, you know, that's what I run into the most, like athletes not knowing and just giving the photo to their sponsors, just like that.
Not cool. We need to make sure that Deb is getting paid for her hard work so you can get back out there. And you have e-bike rental fees to pay. I mean, that.
Oh, yeah. No, and it happens to all the photographers. Like, I've talked about this with, like, all the guys. You know, it happens often that they think that, you know, because the image is digital, somebody can just, like, screenshot a brand even, like, and post it. But then the reality is, like, no one will really, you know, come into my house, take my car keys and just like drive my car away. It's the same thing. It's like it's like something I own, you know, so you wouldn't take it without asking. But it's the same concept, I think.
And what about tips for anyone trying to get a great shot for their own Instagram, you know, especially if we don't have you nearby to come take our photos? You know, what if we're using an iPhone? Are there things we can do to help us get a little bit better of a shot for ourselves?
Yeah, I feel like with iPhone now, anyone can take like a great photo, because it just has such good quality. And even video, like video looks amazing. I feel like something really important is composition, like, you know, making sure that things look straight. Like sometimes I give my phone to my mom and I'll be like, hey, can you take a picture? And then I see the photo and it's like all crooked and it's like my feet are cut. Just like making sure like you don't cut the feet, you know, things are like leveled and the composition looks right, as in, you know, everything's straight. Keeping the phone straight also, like some people tilt the phone up or down, and that distorts the image, you know. That's
I was trying on dresses last week to see how they looked, and I gave my boyfriend my phone and he did that exact thing. Like, I even had like shoes on. I was trying with the dress on, and like, I was like, take a picture, you know, so I can see how I look in this. And I'm like posing, whatever. And then I get the camera and it's like all my ankles, like just cut my ankles. And I'm like,
what? Yeah, it's interesting, because you would think that I assume that everyone naturally sees that, but not everyone sees that, you know.
Some Do you think your architecture, like, kind of education and background also does give you a leg up on people for the composition factor?
I think it does. I think it does, because I've spent, you know, a number of years just like looking at design, and you know, that industry itself is very, like, you have to be detail oriented. And I feel like it has helped me a lot for the photography work I do. But I think composition is something, like, I feel you can study for sure as well.
Oh, there are ways to get better. There's hope. There's hope for all of us. Deb, do you know of any races that you'll be working at later this year?
Yes. So I've been thinking about going to Kona. I think I wasn't going to go, but then I think this week I'm starting conversations and trying to plan it out. So I think I'll be at Kona. Then I'll be at the 70.3 World Champs in St. George. I think that PTO Dallas is happening before that. There's a chance I might be there as well. And which other race? And I think Daytona at the end of the year, because it's sort of like one of the only local races I have. It's a 3-hour drive, so it's like the closest race I have here. So I think I'll be there as well. So there's a few more.
Do you like shooting at like Daytona or Miami, where it's on a racetrack like that? Does that make your life any easier?
Oh yeah, it does. Cause like you see the athletes like 17 times. I think it was Clash Miami. I think it was 17 laps around the speedway. So it's like, you have so many chances and you don't really have to move. You see the person just like in front of you. And I remember I was out on the course and I don't remember who it was. They kept asking me, like athletes kept asking me, is this the last lap? How many laps do I have left? I'm like, I don't want to say, because I don't want to. Like...
You don't want to be the person who gave the wrong information and then someone does an extra lap or someone stops early and they're like, but Dev said.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember who it was when they asked. I've had athletes ask me. But yeah, it definitely does make life easier for me and for the spectators too, because it's, you really get so many chances to see, you know, the athletes. Because in an Ironman, you only see them where you are in the course and that's it, unless it's like a two-loop run course or something like that.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, and we look forward to seeing some of your work later this season. What is the best way to follow your Instagram? Is that the best way to follow you?
Yeah, so the best way to follow me is on Instagram, and the handle is at dnarrowgate, just the letter D.
Okay. But we will be sure to link to that in all of our show notes. Everyone can follow you and watch all of your great photography. But thank you for all of your great images that you've captured so far during your career. And we can't wait to see what's next.
No, thank you for having me. And I hope to see you guys soon at a race. And it's been a pleasure. It's been really fun. Thank you.
Big thank you to Deborah Castellanos for being our guest on today's show. Be sure to follow Deb's photography on Instagram at dnarrowgate, and maybe you'll even be lucky enough to see her behind the camera at an upcoming race. Also, a quick reminder that the special 30% off discount that's off everything at insidetracker.com ends on June 30th. So if you're listening to this on June 30th, you can use that feisty ebook 30 code to get 30% off. If you missed that, you can still head to insidetracker.com/feisty and get 20% off. Thank you so much for listening.
You have been listening to the Iron Women podcast hosted by Haley Chura and Alyssa Gadeski.
Iron Women is a production of Feisty Media and is edited by Amelia Perry and produced by Ella Natitian.
Head to livefeisty.com to find more podcasts, events, stories, and fresh perspectives.
Thanks for listening.